You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.
Here on LA Talk Radio, this is the Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, in the studios, somewhat, with Mr. Richard Polinelli from the Writer's Block, Tuscany Bay Books, and just various other sundry things he has going on. Hello, Richard.
Hello, Mr. Jim. How are you doing out there
Idaho. I know. You the bitch. Idaho. Okay. Okay. And of course,
so it's going to be that kind of show. All right.
It is. And Mr. Russ Avison up there in gorgeous Morro Bay, California.
Yes, here I am. And gorgeous, but pouring rain.
I understand there's going to be like tons of snow in the mountains tonight.
I think so.
Yeah. Wow.
I'm not going to see that here.
Almost May.
Wow. Hey, I don't want to hear about snow. I was supposed to go to North Dakota next week. They had a blizzard last week, and they can't even find the cemetery.
Well, you die fast enough, they'll find the cemetery.
Yeah, okay. I know.
All right. Well, we had a guest lined up for tonight, Miss Carrie Peresta, but she called and was under the weather, could not make it. So you're here with us. And in my wisdom and my quick thinking brain, of which I don't have, I asked the owner of LA Talk Radio and our fine engineer, Mr. Sam Hassan, to join us for the first quarter of the show. And Sam, I know you're with us. How are you, my friend?
Yes, you did indeed invite me, and I appreciate that. I really like. Well, you know what? I haven't been on the air. Wow, in a very long time. Well,
and here you are.
As a guest on the show,
and
yeah.
Here you are.
This takes me back to the old days, you know, in the beginning.
I know,
we had like, you know, like I'm talking 14 years ago, you know. So we had like maybe about 10 shows within like a week or two of opening up. And right. We'd all listen to each other's shows and call in. And it was just like kind of like a college thing, you know, and
right.
It was funny, you know, and we called in a lot and shared and stuff. It was just like lawlessness, you know, and then we grew up, you know,
because you're still an outlaw.
Yeah. And then we it's on hold for now. Yeah. It's on hold for now. Yeah.
You know, I a lot of people are under the impression that this is strictly a podcast. And I would like, well, why don't we have you tell them, Sam, this is not just a podcast. This actually goes out live radio worldwide.
Right.
What we are broadcasting right now is out on the airwaves.
And not only that, but it's live, you know. And if you notice that with podcasts, 99% of them are pre-recorded. They don't have that live element to them, you know. And I from day one with the station, I felt that live is where it's at, you know. I mean,
is important. We tell a lot of our guests that too. Is, you know, this is live radio. Once you say it, you can't take it back.
Right, exactly.
There's no do-overs. So, yes, there is a podcast.
But you know, we're also pioneers in the way that we archive those. If you listen to them back then, people were not doing that. You know, it just. It wasn't heard of, really. So now you can actually go on our website and go back to all the shows. Well, the shows that are still running, their pages are up, and you can see when they started and go back and listen to all the episodes, you know. And, clearly mine is the longest that I've been there. And every episode I ever did was on there, you know. And if I start to count, you know, if let's say... I mean, I used to be on daily 5 days a week, religiously. In the beginning, it was 2 hours in the morning, and then it became one, you know, on my show, Sam in the Morning. And, so I did like, let's say 20 shows a month. You multiply that by 12 months, and then you multiply that by years. And I've done, you know, thousands and thousands and met thousands of people, You know, and
that's a lot of shows.
The numbers are mind numbing. Sometimes you tell yourself, what? You mean I actually had like 2,000 guests in the studio on my show alone? But yeah.
Right.
Well, I probably remember more. Sam when we did Atomic Dog Radio, and that was 12, 13 years ago.
Yeah.
So we were with you right toward the beginning. But I was going to ask you, can you tell a little bit about how you started it? I mean,
yeah.
What was the impetus? What was the impetus for getting things going and how you actually did it?
Yeah. Essentially, what happened was I met a couple of guys who are twins, and they're still my best friends. And they mentioned internet radio. They had something going on where they were doing remote shows and stuff, you know, from their home. And but it was only like non-mainstream stuff, you know, aliens and things like that, you know. But at any rate, but not even that. It's not really science fiction, but everything that's not mainstream, that's what they did. But to me, the content, so, you know, I saw what was going on, and I thought, you know, this doesn't sound interesting to me, those shows, you know. And I thought, but the idea of maybe building something around audio delivery on the internet, you know, like strike a chord with me. And I thought, wow, I can actually do radio without having to get a radio station, like with the tower and all that, you know.
Right.
So, and nobody could stop me at that point. You know, my wife is like, you're crazy, all this. I said, look, let me just start this. You know, I don't know. I'm not going to leave what else I'm doing. I was doing accounting and things like that for companies at the time as a freelancer. And so I went, bought some equipment, got an office downtown L.A. On the 36th floor. It was, you know, it wasn't much, but it was like those executive suites, you know, so you have a lot of common area there. But the office we got was pretty small, but large enough to fit four people and a couple of, like, extra chairs there. And we had a view of downtown. We were higher than the helicopters, you know, on the 36th floor. So people always had something.
Kind of like how I am now.
Yeah, you know, so imagine you do the show there.
And that sounds like it's your 420 friendly.
a day after, right? Yeah. But
you know what I missed, though, speaking, because you brought up your studio in downtown LA, is the studio that we used to go to
in Sherman Oaks.
Right. And I miss being up there. I mean, we joked we were on the 42nd floor.
Right.
But we really weren't.
On the fourth.
You could look out.
Right.
You know, like on the days when the elevator was broken.
Well, right, exactly.
Yeah. I kind of miss doing that. Are there any shows that are back in studio there, or is everybody still doing remote?
Well, what happened was in the lockdown started in March 2020, and immediately people stopped coming in. You know, so people didn't know what they were going to do, and then I thought, well, because we already had some remote shows, but not on video, you know. But I thought, let's just do like those Zoom shows or something, and let people just do whatever they want, you know, online, because they wouldn't come in. So we converted everybody to that. But many people left, of course, because that was really the core of the company, was having a physical radio studio to come to. You know, today you think, you go, wow, we actually took the time to drive somewhere and sit somewhere and socialize and then drive back home. Today, we're just like, people are just doing everything from home, and it's acceptable, you know. And to me, it's just that's like a major, major shift in our lives, you know. Yeah. And as a result of that, what became clear is that the lockdowns are going to stay around for a while. So in April or May, actually in May, so 2-3 months later, we moved out of those offices. And I figured, you know, we started working at home too, you know, Ronan and myself, and running remote shows from home. No physical studio component to it anymore. Back in June, they were reopening L.A., and I thought, you know what? Maybe now we'll reopen the station, or the physical station. So I went ahead and reopened, in a new place, a new location. But then they, 2 weeks later, they closed things again. It's not like now, you know, when the masks are, right. You know, it was like 2 weeks later, right. Everything surged and closed again. And here I am with the studio and not many people were ready to come in yet, you know. So of all the people that asked, well, when are you going to reopen? When are you going to do this? When can we come back to the studio? Out of that, only maybe 4 or 5 shows a week actually came in. And I thought, you know, this is just not, it's not worth it for anybody. It's not what it was. And I'd rather just wait until everything opens up completely and we know what's going on, you know. So I closed that place. That was in December. And now we're all remote, you know, and only God knows what the future brings, you know. I have absolutely no idea right now. This is still a lot of uncertainty, you know, a lot of uncertainty. Yeah. You know, they're already talking about new viruses and pandemics and stuff. I'm like, I can't believe this shit. You know, I mean, what is this? You know, enough is enough already.
I kind of miss some of the people who came out of Amber's studio while we were doing our show.
I know, the adult entertainers.
We should do a whole show just on that.
Yeah, exactly. We had all kinds of shows, you know, anything from Thank You Jesus to adult film actors and stuff. So
that's right.
Yeah, we had the gamut, and it was always nice to see the different cultures. You know, run into each other, sort of, you know. And because, I remember Jim and Amber, it was not pretty in the beginning, you know.
No, it wasn't.
But you know what, Jim?
Eventually. But, you know, she stopped being a bitch. And
Jim, to your credit, everybody agrees on who she is. Everybody that knows her agrees on who she is, so it's pointless to even talk about it. However you said it, that's the way it is, and you know,
she's a nice enough girl, and you know, she just showed that's the vocation she chose.
Right, but that's you know, I mean, it's a question of personality, really. You know,
my first introduction to her was in the engineer's room.
Right,
and she comes in indoors with sunglasses on, looks at me and goes, "You look like someone I should know," and then turn around and left.
And I'm like, well, you know what? One of the funny Amber stories is that we were all in Ronan's office, and Amber came in, and she says, "Jim, can you fix my booster gate?"
Uh-huh.
And she turned around, and it was only done with one clip.
Uh-huh.
And I went to go put the other ones on, and that one came undone, and all of a sudden, we're standing there looking at this chick with naked boobs, and she's trying to hold his bustier up. Ronan, I thought, was going to fall out of his chair. And Richard, I couldn't contain him. He just was rolled over laughing.
Man, yeah. I can't tell you the stories, you know. All the stories from that station, I mean, you know, it's just like, just a great bunch of people over the years, you know. I mean,
it truly was.
You do the math, you know, 14 years, average of about 15 live shows a day, you know, 5-6 days a week.
Right.
Average of 2 to 4 people per show that come in, you know, that's the average. You know, 3 studios. So you're talking a lot of people, and it holds good memories for me. I've met many amazing people that I never would have met otherwise, you know, and then our hosts can say the same thing, you know. I mean,
that's true.
You know,
well, you know, Russ mentioned the elevator, and I have to say that I was on I was on the elevator with someone else who was coming up to the studio. It was going to be an Amber's show.
Yeah.
And you know, remember how that elevator used to be so slow?
Yeah.
If it had been any slower, it'd been backing up.
Yeah. Yeah. And exactly.
It was creeping up. That this guy says, "Does this everything ever get to the top?" And I said, "I have no idea. What day is this?"
No, seriously. I mean, you want to talk about slow elevators? Because, I mean, everybody knew it was the slowest they probably ever experienced. So I would always ask the drivers, the delivery guys, since they go to every building in the area, "Is this the slowest elevator you've been to?" And they're like, "This is definitely the slowest one around." So that's what we had to deal with, and that's terrible.
Well, Sam, we're going to let you go.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you
for joining us. It was a hoot having you, and it was your term to be on our show.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it, and I love you guys.
It's been long overdue.
Yeah. And I love you guys. I miss seeing you guys and everything.
We miss being with you.
And now we all live in different places.
Thanks, Sam Haston. You're listening to LA Talk Radio. This, is, of course, the Writer's Block. We'll be right back after this brief word from Tuskegee Bay Books.
You say you've written the end on a book that makes Rowling's look like Jack and Jill went up the hill, that makes Tolkien's look like a trip to the store, and finishes a series better than George R.R. Martin? But you don't know how to get your book into the hands of readers?
No!
Well, look, before you throw that manuscript in the trash and set Warp 10 for Get Me the Hell Out of Here, go to TuscanyBayBooks.com, click on the Submissions tab, tell us all about your book, and we'll get back with you. Get a great book cover for it. Get it out there so that people can read it and let you know how to market it too, so that you can do the most important thing, write your next book. That's TuscanyBayBooks.com. Go there today.
Be there or be square. And we're back with, it is 6:15 Pacific time. And we're here with Russ and Richard and myself. And unfortunately, no guest tonight. But Richard does have some announcements he needs to make from Tuscany Bay. So, Rich, take it away.
Okay. So, we've been busy little beavers at Tuscany Bay Books, starting with the fact that we have landed the St. Tommy's NYPD series written by Declan Finn. It's 8 books that have been out. We're going to be republishing those just as soon as we sacrifice to Almighty Zahn. A brand new book coming out, hopefully within the next couple of weeks. Also, next Friday, Galen's Blade, the second book of the StarQuest Fourth Age series, is coming out. You can pre-order it now. And if you have not read the first book, which is Galen's Way, it is on sale for 99 cents as an ebook for the rest of the month. So you can get on there and read the first one and hopefully grab the second one. Tuscany Bay Books is also going to be setting up a newsletter and a service we call the Must Read Book Club, which every week we will be featuring at least one book and possibly two that we would recommend that you grab and read if you're looking for some reading material. Go to TuscanyBayBooks.com and you can find the sign up for that sometime early next week. So we'll be getting that all set up as well. And then Planetary Series, to retire that series. So if you've not yet picked up those 11 books, I would recommend you do so now, because by the end of this year, they will not be available anymore. So we're kind of giving everybody a few months to hop on there and grab those. And finally, because I'm a Tuscany Bay Books author, I'm going to be at the Montrose Book Fair at the Montrose Center for the Arts in Montrose, Colorado on May the 14th. It's a Saturday from 10 to 4. It's at 11 South Park Street in Montrose. There's going to be myself and several other Western Slope writers. We're going to be there with books and all sorts of goodies. And we would love you to come by and say hello and visit us. And maybe they'll let us back out of the Art Center if we get enough people to come by.
I mean, they'll take the chain off your feet.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, if we get a certain amount of people, they'll let us come back out the door and go home. Yeah.
I got you.
Still out here in the Western Slope of Colorado.
So back to the Planetary Series, those are not even going to be available by special order. Is that correct?
That is correct. We're pulling them. Probably by, I would say, the end of October, we'll pull them. So you've got 6 months.
Yeah, whatever's left in stock.
Yeah,
and then they're gone.
And they're all right now. They're in ebook, they're in paperback, and they are in audiobook format. So no matter which way you like to read or listen to your books, they're there, but they're only there for 6 more months.
Excellent, Russ. You had a comment that you made that I thought was interesting. And our guest tonight, her book was called The Rising. It was a book.
that's a ringing endorsement of that.
It was not much like her first book, but it's the same characters. It was just the same gal, only she has progressed 2 years beyond where the last book ended. But you made a, you made an interesting observation in that she had a prologue. Or was it you, Richard? I don't remember.
Yeah, I think it was mine.
Oh, that was, yeah, you. It was Richard.
But I'll get to Russ.
But Russ, as a reader,
yes,
do you appreciate prologues in a novel?
In this one, I actually did. I will be honest with you. There's a lot of times I go to a book and I start in chapter one and I bypass the prologue. Uh-huh. Richard's. Yeah, I know. But this one I did read and I liked it. It helped introduce what was going on. So it definitely was good.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, I think, see, because I put prologues in, well, not every single book, but a lot of them. And I do it to set up the story, the first chapter in the story. But the prologues have to be very well thought out. They can't just be thrown in there. Because people will do exactly what Russ does, go right by them.
Yeah.
It was also interesting, though, you mentioned, Jim, that this was the second book that she had written in this, using these same characters.
Right.
I had not read the first book.
Yeah.
And I felt that it was set up and grabbed my attention right away.
Really?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I know that because you read the first one, you felt the first one was better than the second one.
I thought the first one was not better. I thought the second one was written maybe a little too quickly. It was almost like an afterthought she wanted to get through so she could go to the third book. I'm not sure what her thought process was, which was a question I wanted to ask her tonight.
As a first-time reader,
I did not like the book. Huh?
I was going to say, as a first-time reader of her books and picking up this book number two, I felt that it really stood alone. It stood by itself very well. You didn't have to read the other one to understand it.
She referenced the first book enough, I thought, going through that you could, because I didn't know it was the second book until Jim told me. And I'm like, now a few things start to make a little bit more sense.
Yeah.
But at least I wouldn't have to go back and read the first book to get through the second. So she did good there. And with the prologue, I thought her prologue was great.
I thought the prologue was phenomenal.
Yeah. And that's hard to do. As you mentioned, the author that I reference to people who want to know how to write a prologue is Jack McDivitt. He writes prologues that are just outstanding. And when you stop and realize, they really have nothing to do with the primary characters that are going to come. But he's setting up the story for when they get to a certain part.
Right.
You get to that and you're thinking, if you've read the prologue, all that makes sense and it fits and it makes the story even better. And that's a hard balance to strike, but he does it really well.
Right. That's like the prologue I put in Jefferson's Chance. The prologue was him losing his leg, you know, and the doctor and his mother deciding whether they're even going to take the leg, you know. But it sets you up for later on in the book when he gets a new leg. So, and you already know why he's lost the first one. So, I totally agree with you, Richard. And the prologues I've read of yours have been phenomenal as well. So, you obviously take your time to write them.
Yeah, and if I put a prologue in, there's a reason. So read it. Because with Escaping Infinity, I put the prologue in so that when you got to the big reveal, you didn't think, oh, that's a big cheat. You just pulled that out of thin air. No.
Right.
I set
Where
it
was
up.
The Easter egg? It didn't have to do that, right?
Yeah.
Well, I will say about her book, The Rising, that for me, I mean, as I read through it, I felt it was formula. When I started reading, it grabbed my attention right away, and it threw in enough little bits of what was to come that it kept my interest. So from that standpoint, again, I'm not a writer, but as a reader, it grabbed me and I liked it.
Yeah. It took me a couple chapters to get into it. I thought, oh, man, where's she going with this?
Yeah, but you're too critical.
Well, that's my job.
you ought to hear what I say about your books, Jim.
Oh, I'm sure. Wow. Thank God I'm not around. Drink another beer, Russ.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm going to.
Okay.
That's why I'm on vacation.
I hear you. But the bookie, God bless her, gave me a list of things that, as a reader, she likes to see. So I'm going to run down this list real quick with you.
By the way, before you start that, I'm just curious. Yeah. Didn't Jerry write a children's book or something? Did she?
Yes, she did.
So she is.
Let's get into the Scarecrow.
All right, so she definitely is a writer as well.
Well, she actually illustrated it. She didn't write it.
Oh,
her friend Pat Lloyd wrote the actual words. Jerry did the illustrations.
Gotcha.
Okay. It is available. It's available through Black Dog Publishing. It's also available on actually, I think it's in Tuscany Bay Books too. If not, I can give you the link to it. It's available on Amazon for sure. It's called the Pumpkin and the Scarecrow by Jerry, Christina, and Patricia. Anyway, if the cover doesn't grab you, you're not going to pick up the book.
True.
Yep.
I totally agree with that. Her next is a big one, and it's kind of one of mine too. Type and text large enough to read.
Yeah. And there as is we get reason, older, that's more and more important.
Well, there is a reason that Tuscany Bay Books, we ask that our writers submit in Times New Roman font, which is the easiest font to read, in 12-point type, because it's big enough where you can read it. Actually, I can take my glasses off and read Times New Roman 12-point font. So it's much easier on your eyes to read than any other font that they use.
That's good to hear, Mr. Magoo.
There you go.
See, I was going to say, okay, Boomer, but I thought that might be over the line, Nico Magoo.
either one works.
Yeah. Spacing. She says if the lines are too close together, if they're like, there's no space between the lines, it's really hard to read. Mm-hmm. And especially when you're sitting there trying to relax and you're fighting each line. And how many times have you read a book where you've read the same line 5 times because you can't get down past that one line? Yeah, it makes a difference. And then she says, and sometimes the type is way too small and there's way too many words on a page. Especially when you get down to the 4.5 by 5 books or the 4.5 by 6 books that are small books to start with. And then they have that real small print.
Mm-hmm.
And they have like 90,000 words on a page.
Yeah.
And it requires an electron microscope to read it. But those are her bitches as a reader.
It's interesting when you mentioned about the size or the number of words on a page. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if anybody else does this, but when I sit down to read, and there's a difference between reading for pleasure and having to read for the show. We'll read and I'll say, okay, I'm getting tired or I need to do something else, but I'll work toward the end of the chapter. So I like books that are broken into smaller chapters, because then I can pace myself on my way through the book.
Right. Well, I think we're finding now, we certainly do it. I don't know, a lot of the other companies are, some of them aren't, are making not only chapters shorter, but they're also making the book smaller. Mm-hmm. Not smaller in size, but smaller in word count. Authors are giving us shorter word count books. And I think the onus now is on making books the size that you can get on a plane in L.A., fly to New York, and you're done with the book or close to it.
Do you think that's really the reason, or do you think it has something to do with the the attention span of today's public?
It's gone. You know, the 650,000-word books, you know, 1,100 pages, because a lot of the flowery stuff is gone. People are understanding more and more often now how to illustrate in their mind, how to describe something without having to go into 16 pages or a full chapter.
Yeah.
So
yeah, there's some publishers who still want, like Bain Publishing. They want, if you don't have 100,000, don't send them the manuscript.
Yeah,
they're not going to read it. But for us, I'm finding with my own books, and I'll talk for myself on this, is if I can hit between 40 and 60,000. I can tell a good story with good pacing, and so far nobody has said no, this thing's too short, or you didn't fill out enough. I can write it and let the reader imagine some of the things that I'm not describing, because that makes it more real to them as opposed to me, you know, detailing the red rose had seven petals and one was slightly more red than this one over here. You know, yeah. You don't need to get into that level of detail to tell a story. And I'm finding a lot more people like that.
Yeah. And the third one from the left was bent down.
Yeah. You know,
as it were weeping for its brothers,
Yeah, it was the old Frasier show when he was reading a book and the woman is describing her farewell scene to her lover. And he's at the door and Frasier decides to jump and he goes about eight pages and then he stops and says, and then he was gone. So they spent eight pages of this guy walking out the door.
That's great.
That's way too much.
Hey, guys. Hey, Jeff, we got to take another break. You're listening to LA Talk Radio. This is the Writer's Block. We will be right back with you after a brief word from LA Talk Radio. So, you want to be a radio talk show host, huh? Well, why don't you get off your butt and do just that? You see, at LA Talk Radio, we've got slots available all day long, Saturdays and Sundays included. They're 50-minute increments, so all you have to do is go to latalkradio.com, go to click on the link that says Become a Host, follow the easy-to-follow instructions, and Mr. Sam Hassan will be more than delighted to walk you through everything you need to do to get your own radio show started, up and running worldwide with a podcast to follow. That's very easy to do. LATalkRadio.com. Let them help you get your dream alive. LA Talk Radio, you've got something to say. Now let's hear it. Line that says, oh, hell no. This is the Writer's Block screw-up hour, and we're just having 30 minutes past 6, and we are here with Russ Avison and Mr. Richard Polinelli. And hey,
Richard,
myself.
I have a question for you.
Go ahead.
Okay,
sorry to step on you, Jim. So you were talking about taking your book and trying to get 60,000 words approximately. It's a good-sized book.
Uh-huh.
But when you start to write, do you actually think about the word count that you want to achieve, or do you think about what you want to create, and then you will pare it down based on how the editor feels it should go?
You know, oddly enough, I've never gone in and said, let me back up. I did one time. I was trying to hit a certain mark. And I realized halfway through that I was spending more time looking down to see where I was and word count than I was focusing on the story, and it wasn't working. So I threw that mindset out and just got back to work on the story. So when I come into a new project, as I've said before, I write the first chapter, I write the last chapter, and then I have a general idea in my head of how we're going to get from point A to point B, and I just let it go. I just start writing. So I'm not worried about how many words it's going to take. I want to make sure I've got the story. I hit the points I want to hit. You know, I'm doing what I need to do to make it entertaining, to make it readable, and to get to the end where I need to be by the time I get there. So, no, the word count to me, I've never really worried about.
How much editing do you do with a book? Like when you've gotten through the first draft, you've written it, mm-hmm. you've completed it. How does the size of that compare to what you usually end up with? Is there kind of a standard amount that reduced or edited?
It depends from book to book. Escaping Infinity, I got done with the first draft and didn't like the way it ended. And so I threw the ending out and went back and rewrote it from a certain point, about midway. And that added about 15,000 words.
Wow.
Most of the time, you know, I'd say plus or minus add or subtracting maybe 3,000 or 4,000 words by the time I get from first draft to final. I mean, I don't do a whole lot. My editors so far haven't really, you know, take this whole chapter and throw it out at me yet. Knock on wood, all that. So, I mean, with me, I don't really see a big difference word count wise from first to final. And what I consider my final for about 2 days, don't even think about it, go do something else. And then after 2 days, I reopen the file. And I start from the beginning and just start reading and editing as I'm reading. And then when I get to that end, that's the point where I mail it off to my editor and say, okay, have at it.
And okay, I think a lot of it has to do with the amount of books that you've written, mm-hmm. and more craft that you've picked up along the way. And the longer you've written and the more books you've written, the less editing that you really have to have done, because you instinctively know where to stop the silliness, where to let it go, where to stop it before it gets too far.
Yeah.
What would you say is, and I'm asking either one of you, where do you see the whole industry of writing books, where actually a physical book, where do you see the industry evolving to?
Oh, that's the same thing we faced in the newspaper industry about 20 years ago, 20, 25 years ago. Do you see people still getting paper newspapers? And you still do, but you see you go to the newspaper stand and those things are shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. I think as a certain generation ages and passes, I think you're going to see fewer print books. I don't know if they'll ever go away altogether, because I think some people still enjoy a book in their hand. I mean, I've got, if I had the background off, you could look over here. I've got at least 150 books, and that's not counting the Tuscany Bay books we published that are over on this side.
Right.
These are books that I enjoy reading, and every once in a while I'll pull them off the shelf and I'll go through them. I have them on my Kindle, but I prefer sometimes just to pull it off. So I think you're always going to have it, but I think the Kindle ebooks is, for us, that's what we're seeing most of our sales come from, is it's in the ebooks.
Are you seeing a lot more writers coming around now? I mean, are there more people trying to write and mm-hmm. publish material versus, say, 10 years ago?
Okay, yeah. And that has everything to do with Amazon opening the door. Right. You know, you used to have to go through an agent and a publishing house, and it was damn near impossible to do that. But now you write your book. If you're smart, you'll go get it edited and you'll go get somebody and do a good cover for you. But you can write whatever you want, throw it up on Amazon and see what happens. So, yeah I mean, there's a lot of people. It's odd. A lot of people in the newspaper industry that I used to work with have followed my path and they've gone into writing books. It's just so
interesting. That's a very good question. And it's a really good segue. In that, of course, the name of our company is Tuscany Bay Books, and that's what we do. We are a boutique, and there's a big difference between a boutique and a vanity press. And I'll give you the examples. A vanity press is going to take your manuscript. Sure, we'll publish it for you. Great book, blah, blah, blah. We need a $2,500 check before we even get started. And then when Vanity Press is done, you're going to get 15 copies of your book. That's it. If you want to sell it, you got to sell it. They're not going to be listed anywhere. It's going to be just through them or you. A boutique like us, yes, we do have a fee up front, but our fee is very small. And that includes a couple hours of editing if it's needed. It includes, if it's paperback, 5 free books at the end. And a great big discount. I mean, they can buy books from us to sell on their own if they want. And their cost is our cost plus 10%. That's all they pay for them.
And their book also gets a great cover.
And of course, Richard and his little cover thing right there. He does a wonderful job on covers. And if you really, really don't believe that, go to our website and look at some of the covers Richard has done. They are phenomenal.
Okay, so then when you want to sell a book, I mean, you know, in radio, for example, I went to college to work in radio, and I worked at my first radio station probably in 1971.
Mm-hmm.
It was different then from the standpoint that if you had talent or you had something that was unique that you could bring to a station, they would pay you to come and do your show.
Sure, absolutely.
And then it changed to now, and then you shop around your show to a radio station or, you know, a podcast. You've got your advertisers, and then you try and get listeners that way. And it seems to me, in listening to what you're telling me about books, is that It used to be, if you had a book that was good, you'd shop it around to publishers. Somebody say, hey, this sounds great. We're gonna market the hell out of this and sell it for you. It doesn't work that way anymore. No. Unless you're a big name, you know, exactly. Like you're
right.
John Sanford or Patterson or somebody like that.
Speaking of, even John Sanford told us that they only push his book for 2 or 3 months after publication. Mm-hmm. That's it. If it hasn't sold by then, they stop pushing it and they move on to the next one.
But people will buy, like, for example, Lee Child and the Reacher books.
Okay, here we go. Mm-hmm. Reacher,
every year, I in November he comes a new book. So even if I never heard about his books and nobody's trying to push it marketing wise, when I know it's there, I'll go buy it.
Sure,
but he's built up a fan base that is expecting. Like you are, they're expecting every November that Reacher book to hit. There's an author named Brandon Sanderson, traditionally published through one of the big houses. I'm just drawing a blank on which one right now. But the man can just write his manuscript, send it to the publisher. They'll publish it. No extra work on his part.
Right.
Recently, he went and did a Kickstarter. And all he said was, I have 4 books that I'm going to release. No title, no nothing, no information. Just if you buy into this Kickstarter, I will release 4 books that are already written, but it's got to clear the funding. He put it at $1 million.
Okay.
By the time the Kickstarter ended, it was at $41 million.
Oh, God. Wow.
Yeah. So to me, the publishing industry is going to change. And, that's just one big road sign saying, okay, this is the way to start going. I'm not saying everybody should go this way because he cashed in because of his name.
Sure.
But if you can develop, and that's the key, you've got to develop a readership, a following, people who are going to, as soon as you say, hey, I got a book out, They're gonna stampede down there and buy it as soon as it comes out. And that's where a lot of authors aren't getting it. You've got to get out there and establish that fandom because nobody else is going to.
And what do we call that, Richard?
Marketing. My
yeah.
There's an author Jim knows, and I'm not gonna name names because I don't want to get him in trouble. But he was at a show. And he had all this marketing stuff. I mean, it was massive. And I think Jim knows which one I'm talking about.
Yep.
And so I went over and I said, boy, my God, they pulled out the stops for this new book of yours. He goes, no, they didn't do a thing. All this is money I spent and I bought all this.
Yep. And he's been on this show a number of times.
And he can sell a book, but his publisher doesn't do that much marketing. I think a lot of authors are mistakenly coming in and thinking, okay, the publisher bought my book. I can sit back and wait for the dump trucks to dump the money in my front yard.
It doesn't happen that way.
No.
Right, right. I mean, it's traditional publishing is shrinking company by company as they get snatched up. Like it used to be 5, now it's 4 of the big ones. And they just, as they are incorporated and merge and, the big publishing houses are pretty soon only going to be like 2.
Yeah.
You know,
we picked up Declan's St. Thomas series because his original publishing house folded.
Folded, yeah. Yeah.
Well, also, let me ask you, because I know, being a dog trainer, and I've been doing this a long time, I know that the majority of dog trainers don't make much money. They could be excellent trainers, but for whatever reason, they're not good with people or they can't run a business. They don't do well. And I would say that in dog training, it's probably that, 80-20 rule, or 20-80, however you want to put it, but 20% of the trainers make 80% of the money.
Sure.
Even though that doesn't necessarily mean they're the best. And has that happened with writers too? Do you find that the majority of writers aren't they make that much money?
Yeah.
Most of them don't even recoup their cost.
Huh. Then also a lot of times it's because it's a work of passion. They want to do it because they love it.
Yes, and that's exactly it. And that's why you write a book to start with.
Mm-hmm.
Because you believe in the story. You want to tell the story. You know, that story, you're passionate about that story. And that's why you write a book to start with. It doesn't mean, you know, we tell everybody, don't quit your day job. Don't think you're going to, this is going to go on Amazon and you're going to be able to retire tomorrow. No. No, Richard and I have been doing this a lot of years, and we still ain't, well, I'm retired because I'm old, but, you know. But.
Yeah, I've been
doing
it.
Retire because I books.
I jumped to indie publishing, what, about seven years ago. Was it seven or those 20?
I think it was, well, it was right before Tuscany Bay.
Okay, so about five or six years.
But before you finish your story, what does that mean, jump to indie?
Well, I started out like everybody. You know, I wanted to be traditionally published. I wanted to get an agent. I wanted to get a publisher to pick up my book. I wanted to walk into Barnes & Noble and see the big display with all my books on it and go, ah, it's me. Yeah. And I got the agent. I got the publisher. I didn't get the Barnes & Noble thing. But I discovered through a series of interesting adventures that traditional publishing is not all it's cracked up to be. And if I'm going to bust my butt doing what I did those 2 years of traditional publishing, why am I giving away 85% of what the book is making to the publisher and to the agent who are just sitting behind a desk all day?
Right.
So that's when I pulled my books from my traditional publisher and my agent. And the options were there. I could self-publish. I know marketing. So I took a leap of faith and did it. Now I've been doing it for 5 or 6 years, and I say this is probably this last year is the first year where I'm seeing making more money than I'm putting out.
Right, we're actually making money this year. So
yeah, if you're going to do this, and I warn people, if you're going to jump into indie, be prepared for it to take a long time. Now some people, they stumble into a pile of crap and come out with a handful of diamonds. That's just sometimes it happens.
And our merger came about from, you know, a margarita fueled luncheon.
There you go.
we were having lunch, and Richard had been on the show a couple times, and I loved his imprint, Tuscany Bay. I just loved that. It was a great name. And I said, look, I said, I've got Black Dog, and he knew about Black Dog Publishing. And I said, I've got Black Dog. And I said, I've got the business license. I've got this. Why don't we merge them together? And that way we got a legitimate Tuscany Bay Books that's an imprint of Black Dog Publishing. And he goes, okay, let's do that. Yeah. And then after that, we wrote our own book together.
Yeah.
And so what's happened since that inception of the
merging? Well, we actually have picked up, we have published, I don't know how many books we've published.
I'm counting right now.
Okay. A number. We have branched out into several different venues.
Books that aren't written by Jim or myself. Mm-hmm. I think the number is around 24.
Outstanding. Okay.
Yeah, and that's probably what do you think, Richard, about 18 authors? 19 authors?
Yeah. If you don't count everybody who was in the anthology series.
Right. I'm not.
That's 90 more people if you want to toss in the short story folks. But I think of the book writers, about 18.
Yeah, I see. I will even do. We just finished a poetry book for a gentleman in Tennessee, called what is it?
Reenchanted.
Reenchanted. It's inspirational poetry and prayers. As I talked to our publicist who works with us at Tuscany Bay, of course it's Mickey, and I said, we're going to miss his commercial tonight, but that's okay. Mickey said, no, I don't want to do poetry books. So I had to get back with Rob, his name is Rob Jones, and say, look, Mickey doesn't want to take any more poetry books unless you're an established author with him already and have already published books while you were a client. So, poetry books, we'll do them. One or two, maybe some of your friends. poetry books, but I mean, I have nothing against poetry. I've got one out there. Mm-hmm. But I just happen to get really good reviews on it. But poetry books historically do not sell. And you know what, guys? We're out of time.
Out
of time. Totally. We actually have another show scheduled I think June or July, just for us. So we can pick this up again then. Oh, yeah. But Russ, thanks for being with us, and we want to thank
pleasure.
Mr. Sam Hashton for joining us for the first 15 minutes of the show. What a treat.
Yes.
And Sam, you know, we love you and we miss you. And we're not going to run the last ad, so you can spend some time with your friends. And so for Richard Polinelli, Mr. Russ Avison, of course, Bobby Jean Bell, who is unable to be with us tonight. And we're sorry that our guest, Cary Peresta, could not join us, but we wish you the best, and I'll give you a call tomorrow and see how you're doing. For myself, Jim Christina, and of course, for the bookie, without whom the writer's block would not be possible, we are out of here.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.